Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. For Monday, April 15th, we have a fine show for you today. My name is Magnus Tiefold. I'm your host, and joining me today is...
Peter R.H.
And what are you going to be talking about today, Peter?
Well, it's a 1960 documentary. It was actually broadcast on CBS on primetime Thanksgiving 1960. It was called it's called Harvest of Shame. It's very available on the internet. Just Google it, you'll get the documentary.
Great.
And it was about migrant farm workers. And at that time, you really didn't, now, not migrant, actually. I misspoke, because it was people who were citizens of the United States who were being ill-paid and in very bad conditions. And I saw also... Also, over the weekend, the Fifth Estate did something 4 years ago. And this case, it is migrant workers, people being brought from various parts of the world to Canada to do farm work.
Right.
And it actually has improved as such. But it's the documentary was it's kind of odd, because we kind of see that period as a good economic period in the United States, even though there were some recessionary periods, which that was coming out of, and still to see the conditions people were at. And also, you had about 10% of the population is black in the United States, and I guess in Canada too. But so be it that they had more of a percentage of these people, the migrant workers, being black, maybe like 30% or whatever, it was still a lot of white people. It was sort of like...
Well, let's get back to that in a minute.
Okay.
Because we got to get the rest of the intro done. We also have our segment on gardening with Embark. More talk about getting your garden bed ready. Plus bird notes, some great music, and some other stuff. So big thing in the news this morning. Well, I mean, Donald Trump is always... seemingly in the news.
We're going to be talking about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's going on trial today for the case for hiding payments, cover-up payments in the Stormy Daniels case. All the details of that have been sort of hashed over a lot, but it's significant because with the start of this criminal trial, he has to be in the courtroom for the trial itself, and that's going to be 4 days a week, and they expect the trial to last for 2 months.
He's found a way to get out of these legal situations in the past.
Yeah, I'm waiting to see how long before they try and put forth some sort of stay of proceedings or some delay that requires things to go off to like a higher court or something, and it like takes weeks or months before it gets back to going. He does seem to be able to wiggle out of just about anything.
Lyndon LaRouche, who has died, I guess he's been dead for like 7 years. He ran for president in jail, but he wasn't one of the major parties, though.
Right.
So it has happened. You're in jail and you run for president.
And, of course, you know, showing up at the court each day gives him a chance to do his usual claims of being very unfairly treated. He was doing his usual, you know, this is the most, you know, the most extreme situation that's ever in the history of all time been put against any candidate to blah, 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 blah. You know how he talks. I mean, it's all in extreme superlatives.
Well, I covered a few weeks ago that 1990 documentary about him, and he's always been doing something shady. It's interesting in 2016 that wasn't really brought out, that documentary I talked about a few weeks ago. I was expecting you speaking about Iran attacking Israel or something.
Yeah, well, that's also a good topic to embrace today. I mean, again, also big in the news with Iran striking back at Israel for Israel's attack on a Iranian embassy in Damascus in Syria 2 weeks ago.
But they are contending Israel attacked their embassy, right?
I thought that was established, that it was Israel.
Oh,
like an airstrike. Well, I guess we're stuck with some uncertainty there. Anyway, it should be interesting. I don't know, or terrible.
I'd like it to be boring there.
Exactly.
For a while,
it would be nice to be boring.
I finally saw
Israel's
that.
Israel is using its response, which will be something. It seems inevitable. That's the nature of these things. You know, it's like, you know, Party A does something, Party B has to retaliate. Party A has to retaliate for that. And either they run out of steam or it turns into something.
Well, now they have to not go further, because now we have it with Iran and Israel. It's one thing to have it with Hamas, I guess, the Gaza Strip or what they've been doing. But now this, you can't really lead to a bigger war. I mean, it's so this is a bit more tricky for them. I mean, they can't be encouraged to go much further.
Yep. So as always, the Middle East is a boiling pot of trouble.
I saw that film. Israelism, finally.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, when I saw it the first time, I fell asleep because I wake up so early for Mondays. It was on a Monday showing at UBC, and then but I saw it. So that was done previous to the October attack. So Israel sort of has, whether you feel it's rightfully or wrongly, they've become a militant state for quite a while, drafting people, not allowing you to leave the country until you have done your service. So there's certain problems with that.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had a chance to see that film yet? Israelism?
I have not heard of it.
Oh, you haven't heard about it?
No.
It was on Democracy Now! They had. Yeah. Anyway, so that's...
All right, well, let's go with a quick song here, and then we'll be back to talk about the documentary.
Yeah. Harvest of Shame. It was shown on CBS television in prime time, but the American Thanksgiving, yeah. 1960.
All right, we'll be back in just a few minutes.
The destination is where
Ty Segall and The Bell from a new album called Three Bells. New in our playlist here at CJSF 90.1 FM.
I think part of the film we're going to talk about,
Harvest of Shame.
Harvest of Shame, 1960. Is it kind of like you brought up last week about like the 4-day work week and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of work is not automated yet. I mean, like farm work and so on. And part of the thing, it seems that it goes through all these middlemen, you know, like you get it done and then they sell it to a certain supplier and there's all these middlemen, whatever. And so the actual people that do the work hardly get paid anything to this very mm-hmm. day, in a sense. Or we're bringing people from outside the country in the right. same situation. And the other thing is that
tell me about the film itself. You know, what's sort of the premise and what was? I mean, it sounds like it was exposing something that maybe people didn't know about before.
Well, yes. I mean, what it was the shocking conditions these people were in. Now, they were migrant in this way because they were traveling mm-hmm. across the United States from crop to crop or farm to farm. And one part in the film that they're bringing up that actually cattle were treated better or other vegetable goods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing is that there's children involved too. And the other thing that's really shocking is that, you know, usually they have like, well, they used to have truant officers. I don't know how out of date that thing is, but I don't even remember in my lifetime them existing. But they have children involved, not going, but to school. And it's mm-hmm. like because they're in this sort of reality with their parents. There was one couple that had 9 children, and they weren't making much, and it was sort of pretty shocking.
Mm-hmm.
There was no concern under this circumstance for them going to school, which was, you know, it's kind of odd. It's like this hidden reality, like, oh, this is how it's done, and we're not going to do much about it. Now, the Great Society programs of President Lyndon Johnson, were sort of addressing this like a type of rural poverty, whether or not it was I guess it was in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
But first, then it became the illegal. We're talking about California. In California, the illegal Mexican person coming. And then it became, I think in California, it's the migrant, like the idea of a migrant. In the other context is that they come from Mexico and they're agreed, they're allowed to come, and then they go back after it's done. And that sort of even taken the place of the illegal, not that I'm against, I just want to clarify that, because some people make a big thing. No, I'm not really against people that are illegal immigrants or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that has taken the place of it.
Yeah.
So the other thing was that it was the farm, the American Farm Bureau. He in the documentary, he kind of says, "Oh, it's better for someone to be gainfully employed." I guess he's talking about going on welfare or whatever. Then, even though they're not making that much money, but it's sort of. It's sort of in the
the argument of any work is better than no work.
Yes, and also there was a situation that happened in the late 60s when there were, I guess the documentary had its impact, and some people in New York State, because New York State has an agricultural sector actually mm-hmm. outside of Manhattan, of course.
Yeah.
they were trying to bring these people into New York, have them on welfare, I guess, and there were agencies stopping that, sending them back, sending them a bus ticket back. So I think it's one thing that's never, I mean, in our society right now, is certain jobs that needed to be done just don't pay that much. And we now bring people in from the country to be doing it. There was a, I got a book here I've read previously, but I went over it over the weekend. This is, it's called American Social Arsonist. It's about a Fred Ross, and he tried to have a grassroots organization in California about these people that were sort of caught in the situation. And what they were trying to do was to get the wages higher. But it wasn't that successful. There was a lot of pushback on it. And he kind of thought his life was unsuccessful at the end because it was hard to make any inroads in it. So I don't know that the future, I don't know. I mean, nobody really thinks about maybe not having so much middle people in seriously, because it's like our society is in many ways kind of lopsided. In many ways, because it's like, how do we intend in the future to proceed? I mean, actually, with the future of 1960, what happened was basically that, as I think I mentioned a bit after 10, that there were white people. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was more of a percentage of the black population. That's about 10%. I'd say from seeing the film was like 35% black, but there were a white population, which sort of means that there was sort of class in America, like you were of a class and you couldn't get out of it in what was really not a bad economic period. Now, here's something interesting, and I just got this from Wikipedia about it. Now, Edward R. Murrow is also, what's that?
But well, he was the famous journalist for CBS.
George Clooney,
The film, yes.
he played him, but so he's famous for the Joseph McCarthy standing up, and that's... Yeah. No, this is the second thing. This is the second thing he's known for. But this was rather interesting. After Edward R. Murrow joined the National Security Council as a propagandist for the United States, his position led to an embarrassing incident shortly after taking the job when he asked the BBC not to show Harvest the Shame to avoid damaging the European view of the U.S., the BBC refused, having brought the program in actual good faith. British newspapers were delighted in the irony of the situation, with a Daily Sketch writer saying, "If Murrow builds up America as skillfully as he tore it in to pieces last night, the propagandist war is as good as won." And I was reading directly, which I usually don't do. But I just found that out now. That was a bit surprising that I didn't know that fact about it. It's kind of funny that he doesn't. It's also sponsored by a cigarette company, which they get most of the ads out, but they didn't get that original ad from a cigarette company, which was common at the time. Have you done any farm work, Magnus, in the past or anything? I haven't.
No, not really. You know, I do know that, when it comes to farm work, it's always been somewhat dependent on migrant labor because, of course, it's seasonal work and workers would move along with the seasons. You know, they'd start in the south, and as the harvest season moves along in northern, more and more northern. But it's also, I think, always been a place of poor pay and hard work.
Well, one of the things that's brought forth in the documentary is that, or the reason that they present why it's bought at the or why they broadcast at the American Thanksgiving is that they're responsible for your food on the table. And
what you're ostensibly giving thanks for at that holiday.
Yes. So that was the other aspect of it.
Yeah. The other part of this is the idea of, you know, bringing in workers to work these low-wage jobs that other folks don't want to do. You know, I mean, at you know, the time of this film, it sounds like there was a, you know, a lot of, you know, both Americans and perhaps Mexicans coming into work
in the fields, and later on it becomes
you know, more and more just Mexicans coming to do this kind of work.
Right.
And again, you know, the system sort of taking advantage of their willingness and perhaps need to get work, even if it is low paid and very difficult.
Well, I saw the Fifth Estate article. They had this, I guess it was 3 years ago. And COVID figures into it, because actually the migrant, in that case, is a migrant from another country. And actually they're asked to leave once it's done. It's not mm-hmm. like they come here to stay. No, it's like, yep. There was a problem with COVID because they were stuck on the actual farm.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a problem.
Also during COVID, they actually, even though generally speaking the border was closed, and we weren't supposed to really be doing people coming and going in and out of the country, you know, to protect for COVID, the needs of agriculture harvesting, if I recall correctly, meant that they actually still had to bring in workers because they still needed somebody to work in the fields.
Right.
So there was like a special program that allowed a certain number of workers to come to work on farms. Otherwise things would go unharvested. You know, stuff wouldn't get, you know, wouldn't get dealt with.
That was brought up in the Fifth Estate.
Yeah, and it sort of speaks to the, you know, how dependent the system is on that. And that's, you know, the fact that, you know, it's using migrant workers perhaps isn't the problem so much as the fact that they're migrants without much visibility or power means they're easy to exploit. And I think that's probably what's happening in you know, the film you talk about and still happens today to a certain extent.
Well, I'm thinking that what they get paid for in Canada, is there more bang for the buck, as it were, when they go back to Jamaica or India? Is that sort of the idea of it? Because I'm wondering if that's part of the premise of it.
I think so.
Yeah. It's still not okay.
Another similar situation to this is what we see with, you know, either immigrant workers or temporary foreign workers, you know, increasingly working in industries such as fast food. You know, and I often think about the idea, you know, is fast food so important that we either have to keep the wages really low, which is the only way the business is viable, and therefore have to import workers, or should they just really have to pay better wages so people actually want to work those jobs? And if it means the food's more expensive, so be it. And if that means it's not a viable industry. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, capitalism and the free market loves, you know, speaking about, you know, how the market should rule, except when it maybe affects their profits. And then, of course, they want to, you know, create an artificial situation by flooding the market with workers or low-wage workers to keep, so that they always have a pool of people to work these cheap jobs.
What's this you're talking about for fast food? There's temporary workers?
Yeah, you know, I mean, they can apply there's been changes to it, but, they can apply to a program to bring in workers. They have to make a claim that they can't get anyone here to work the job, a Canadian to work the job, and then they can apply and go, well, I can't get anyone to fill this job. So I want to apply to this program and be able to bring in workers or sponsor workers, you know, to work in my business.
So this is happening outside the agricultural worker too. Yeah. Now. One thing in the doc in the 1961, and you have a, you don't have it that much in the Fifth Estate article from a few years ago. You actually have this one farmer saying about the well, they're migrant and that they're citizens of the United States, but they're moving around. And he goes, these are the happiest people you can. It's just shocking that he says it. These people, they don't have any worries. And they're going. I mean, it's obviously not the truth. I mean, it's really shocking when you see it. And the conditions that they're in, like a mattress or on hay, sometimes they're sleeping. Yeah. It's also, but the children also. Not going to school. And so
not having any stability.
Yeah.
You know, they're just moving from place to place.
Yeah, so it is odd. It's kind of like, I guess, the powers that be turn a blind eye. But especially when it's a citizen of the United States, black or white. It's just that it was just that at that time it was also white. Not that there's anything better or worse being white or black. It's just that they're not going to school and they don't really.